You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the Real UW hashtag is helping UW students share their stories about race-related encounters on campus. We'll talk to a recent UW grad about his experiences and why he says it's time for change.
The Real UW hashtag, it's been around for a while on social media, but in recent months it's been picking up steam anew as students of color at the UW campus share it, to share their stories about race discrimination on campus.
UW-Madison administrators have said they're listening to the conversation unfolding. They recently responded by calling for a cultural competency pilot program and more counseling services, along with other changes.
A student with UW-Madison's First Wave program is credited with restarting the Real UW hashtag after a fellow student in her residence hall spit in her face and made derogatory comments about her race and her scholarship status.
Michael Penn II is a recent graduate of UW-Madison and the First Wave program. He's been part of the Real UW hashtag conversation on social media. We spoke with him late last week in studio. In the sharing of his studio, Penn used language that some listeners might find offensive.
Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, how would you say that the Real UW stories are unfolding? What kind of effect is that having?
It's another hashtag in a slew of narratives that tie us all together. It's actually not a new hashtag. I'm not sure what it was that incited this to pop up the way it did, but I think it was a certain string of incidents. There's been about 3 or 4 racially charged incidents in the last month or so on UW's campus, and one day I woke up and it just started popping, so...
How often were students using this hashtag?
I haven't seen it very often. I've seen it faintly, but as of late, it was just a week straight of people going in, and I felt like I had to go in too. So it's beautiful to just see, like, even if it is very digital, it's beautiful to see this camaraderie, and it's horrifying. It's horrific to see just what Black students go through, what Latino students go through, what first-generation kids go through, what women go through, what queer folks go through, It's a lot to take in. In fact, I found a lot of difficulty in peeling myself away from it, but it's just when you scroll and see all these thoughts just juxtaposed side by side, and you get to see just how ridiculous a lot of our peers, a lot of our classmates are, it hurts you. You know, it grips you. It's just difficult. It's really difficult to reconcile with, to see we're still having the same conversations over and over again. And administration wants to try to do what it can to turn that narrative, to control the narrative, to say they're listening, but apparently listening is not the solution.
And you're a graduate of UW-Madison. You were a member of the First Wave program, too. Did you see the same kind of thing when you were still in school that just wasn't a hashtag maybe to go with it?
First, I have an anecdote I love to tell. The first time I even stepped off the plane from Maryland, right? So I didn't know what to expect. I don't know if it was cornfields or what. I had nothing. Like, my father told me, you'll see it when you get there. Like, I didn't even get to visit here. So I got off, and I went to Red Robin. I think it was around University Avenue or so. And I was having food with my family because I like bottomless french fries. You know, like, bottomless french fries are lit, you know? So I was I was sitting there, and we come from a Black suburb. We come from, like, a Black area. It's rare to just be in an entire space full of white people. We step in this place. There's nothing but white people. The only non-white people are busing and waiting tables. And we sit down to eat, me, my mom, my dad, and my sister. And there's a super old white couple, probably like late 60s, early 70s, that are just staring at us every time we look to our left. They're staring like they've never seen us before. Which, as I've moved forward in my career here, it's like, that's not uncommon. Like, I'm going to class and I'm living by people who may not have lived by any person of color at all. That's not out of the realm of normalcy. So within my first 2 or 3 hours in this state, that was my first experience. I remember my freshman orientation, and feel free to stop me whenever. Yeah, my freshman orientation, there was a presentation where my friend, another First Wave alum, like First Cohort alum, Dinez Smith, he's doing amazing things, by the way, he had taken a picture of the Black Venom doll, the Spider-Man Venom doll, hanging over Badger House, which actually isn't a fraternity, it's just on Langdon, but yeah, somebody decided to take a Venom doll, like a life-size one, wrap it on a noose, and throw it over a balcony, and he took a picture of it. So a couple months after that, the CEO organization was trying to repeal affirmative action. You know how these organizations try to do that every couple of years or so, like, or at least once or twice a year. It's very cyclical. A lot of conversations in this town are very, very cyclical. We have the same affirmative action is stupid debate. We have the same I'm not racist debate. We have somebody from somewhere doing something racially charged and then seeing little to no punishment for it. Maybe they get moved from to a different dorm. Maybe they just have to apologize, but, you know, it's tiring.
And you made that critique about listening, that UW has taken this sort of listening stance. And I saw that in a lot of the tweets in response to the Real UW hashtag, that UW said, you know, keep going, we're listening. You're saying maybe that's not enough. And now we have some action points from the UW, from the chancellor, who wants a program of cultural competency activities, more counseling services, an improved campus cultural center, maybe where everyone's under one big roof together. And also learning about hate incidents and campus disciplinary procedures. Does that sound like a good start to you to address this?
It sounds like we've done it before. It sounds like Plan 2008. You have to keep these goals very wide to make it seem like you're reaching them. So if we get 4 or 5 years deeper into a plan of some sort and we're still having the same discussions and the same complaints, if you've taken even a remote step, whether that's hiring somebody, whether that's hiring a woman, whether that's hiring a person of color, whether that's hiring a queer person, it's like, it looks like we're going forward, but then we just keep regressing into this listening phase. That's great to hear on paper, but we need practicality and we need money. We need the logistics to make this happen. Furthermore, you do not need to expect your students to play the role of educator over and over again. That's not what we signed up for. You should be giving us the salary. You should be giving us the tenure.
What do you mean by that, having your students play educator? What does that mean?
I'm saying that to say, I'll speak on my own experience as a black male, which obviously is my experience, not the experience. I don't mean to imply that at all. We've done a lot of educating, whether that's pulling people to the side, or that's trying to stop people from slurring, whether that's breaking up for white men on Langdon, jumping one of my Latino friends. Like, me and seven of my other friends just walked out to Langdon one time and saw our friend getting jumped. Had to break it up. Like, 5 or 6 people who had to break this entire thing up, like, push people back in a circle, try to stop them from getting cheap shots off at them. My friends' friends are crying because, like, they're, like, wondering what's going on. Police car ends up coming down the block. The dude runs away. We're all pointing at him, saying, he did it. Look, and he also hit a woman in the face right there, like, 5 minutes ago. Like, it's him. No arrests. Not even a detain, you know? Just ran up the block, kept the lights off, kept it moving. I say that to say, it's part of the process, you know, and I'm happy that I was able to acquire these skills personally to effectively dialogue and communicate with individuals from other backgrounds, especially when it comes to being flagrant or being disrespectful to my culture in particular. But I shouldn't have to come into this space, into this predominantly white space, with the expectation of having to just share all of this knowledge for nothing if you want to keep listening and then not going forward with your plan in an effective way that's producing real results.
We're talking with Michael Penn Jr. He's a graduate of UW-Madison and the First Wave program there, and he's been part of the Real UW hashtag conversation on Twitter. And Michael, one thing that people talk about when you look at instances where there might be an atmosphere of fear, of bigotry, is it impacts learning.
Indeed.
How can you focus on that? Did you find that to be the case, or was this something that was more like white noise?
More so around me. I kind of just had to tuck my head down because I knew I was going to finish no matter what, but I can't say the same for a lot of my peers. They can't necessarily focus on a class when their body is always at risk no matter where they walk and when they wake up. You know, it's difficult to focus on graduating from college when Tony Robinson gets shot. You know, it's difficult to focus on insert exam here when another non-indictment comes down the pipe, even if it's not Wisconsin, if it's New York, if it's Chicago, et cetera, et cetera. It comes with a certain territory that people aren't coming in to this university experience on the same baseline, giving off all these made up markers like race, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the reality that's been formed, that's been crafted for it. So it's something that we have to not only embrace, but endure. Try to be very careful, you know. It's Can you run the question for me one more time? Because I'm trying to just make sure I address this thoroughly.
Does it get in the way of learning, graduating?
Yes.
The big goals.
Yes.
Is why
okay.
The
yeah,
reason
yeah, yeah.
you're
the
at the
big
university.
Goals. The reason why. Yes. Not to be, you know, not to be like basically an unpaid, untenured TA to people who want to call me nigga all day. You know, like not that, but just focusing on the class. You know, focusing on the learning environment. Like, how do you sit, cope in a learning environment when you feel like you're always endangered? When you feel like you don't have the resources to be protected necessarily, not even out of intentionality of not protecting someone, but a person in a position of power, be it a TA or a professor, that lacks the competency to effectively do that, whether it's someone saying something ridiculous in class, whether it's an RA who may not know how to understand or handle like a racial thing, or even just kids who go through this university and can't even finish because of the serious psychological toll and mental health toll that this place can have on individuals of color and et cetera, et cetera. It's a lot to take in. It's a lot to digest. And I'm thankful that I was able to get through 4 years. And I'm thankful that I've been able to suck my own head down. But I can't say the same for everyone else. And regardless, there's been incidences and instances in my own college career where I feel like I really needed some type of help and needed some type of institutional support, but I didn't trust myself to go seek it, for one, and two, because I felt like even if I would have went to another person, I don't think much would be done, because the precedent is nothing really gets done. When someone who lived on my floor in Chadbourne, for example, when I was a sophomore, called me a goddamn nigger during my president debate, you know, like, it didn't even occur to me to go to my house fellow. Not like I didn't think she was competent in doing her job. I was like, this is what I signed up for. You know, like, I'm a black person. I'm in Madison, Wisconsin. Like, this is going to happen again. Like, there's no point in running and snitching. So I didn't do that. Like, 19-year-old me didn't do that.
Would you do that differently now?
I mean,
there's a whole different context now, right? Because there's the Black Lives Matter movement, which isn't just happening in Wisconsin. It's happening across the country. And it seems like there's a consciousness change happening. So do you think that will shift things a little?
I would definitely hope so, and I'm going to do whatever it takes in my own power with my own devices to make sure that I see that through to make sure that I try to contribute what I can. And I just think I have these moments where 22-year-old me would do stuff way differently than 19-year-old me, but I would hope so, just because we're rising in this consciousness thing. I mean, even though that's that type of language I'm careful of too, you know, given like, oh, I'm woke, like being woke is just a moment and then you understand everything about the world. I don't understand everything about the world and I never will. I'm just trying to learn like everyone else. Like, I'm not in a position to be perfect or to preach down to anyone else. I'm just trying to share what I know because I know what I've experienced. I know what my friends are experiencing. And this is not an issue that can be solved with one side. This is not an issue that we can approach in a one-sided nature, you know?
I'm going to leave it there. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate you.
Michael Penn II is a recent graduate of UW-Madison and its First Wave program. Today, he's a rapper and a facilitator. He's been part of the ongoing conversation using the Real UW hashtag on social media.
Coming up in just a few moments, Ken Rudin, political junkie, and today's weird election. This is Central Time.